Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green and a cold, cold morning for everyone. Colder south of the Rochester and away from the lakes. These are the kinds of nights where it makes a big difference. Whether you're close to Lake Ontario or Seneca Lake or Canandaigua Lake, this is when it can make the difference between frost and shutting down the grapevines, no more ripening, and an extended season where normally those grapevines will keep maturing and sugars keep building in the grapes until maybe mid-October, sometimes later. And so cold morning, 39 in the city, but 35 or so in Avon and Perry. I often check Avon and Perry seem to be a couple of the colder towns south of Rochester. And again, maybe some pockets of freezing temperatures, little microclimates where the cold air settles, and but hopefully no frosts for anyone out there. It is way too early to get a killing frost, and I haven't brought anything inside, any of my tropical plants, any of the annuals that I keep inside for the winter. So I was hoping that the forecast was right, and we didn't get below 39 in the city, and that's about what it was when I woke up this morning. So another couple cold nights ahead, tonight, tomorrow night, both of those going to be in the 30s, and maybe 37 Sunday night, 39 tonight. And so again, those forecasts may be off a few degrees, and they're forecasting 37, they're off a couple degrees. That puts you really close to 32 and freezing temperatures. So maybe cover a few things. If you have peppers, tomatoes, they really don't like night times in the, I don't like them in the 40s, much less the 30s. So you might cover them, even though they're not predicting a frost where you live, perhaps. You still might consider covering. Basil, you really should just harvest it today, because it is not going to be happy with a couple more nights in the 30s, and your hopes and dreams of one last batch of pesto could be ruined by these cold temperatures. So we put away a whole bunch of pesto earlier this week, 10 jars of pesto to make meals over the winter, and we've got a little bit left in the garden to make one more batch today, our final batch of pesto. So a couple of things right now. Think about the annuals, tropical plants maybe, that you might want to bring inside for the winter. Hopefully you maybe have to cover them, but maybe don't have to bring them inside this early. We get through these couple of nights in the 30s, and then the long-range forecast is for nights in the 50s. So that's more normal, and we just got to get through a couple of these cold nights. So I'm leaving my stuff outside. May cover a couple of things Sunday night with that forecast of 37. But thinking about which annuals and things I want to bring in, generally begonias are fantastic as houseplants for the winter. They don't need much sunlight. They'll bloom for you. They'll really look beautiful. They'll probably bloom a little bit more and be a little more full if you give them some a sunny window. But they don't really need that. And often my goal by keeping a begonia over the winter is to create kind of a mother plant that I can propagate. Or in the case of geraniums, it's a plant that I really love the color. I've got this one geranium. I got it at Lucas Greenhouses a couple of years ago, and it is just this hot pink. Really, it's like an extra dimension to this pink. It's pretty amazing. And so I kept over last winter, propagated it, and I've got more of it this winter. I probably won't keep all of them, but I will keep a few of them. And geraniums are exceptionally tough. You can actually, and I've never done this, but I know people who have. You can, if you have it in a pot, you can bring it in. You can basically let it go dormant, let it dry out completely. So people will take them out of the pots and basically dry them, in a cool, dry basement. And then you do have to start really early in the spring if you want to start regrowing them and propagate them, because it'll take them a little while to get going. So if you wait until, April to restart those geraniums, they're going to be way behind anything you could buy, which, by April you can buy blooming geraniums in the greenhouses and garden centers. So you really got to start, that'd be like February, and start watering them and bring them upstairs and give them some light and some moisture. I'll let them get started. But I just keep the geraniums as houseplants, so I don't bother with drying them out. They bloom all winter. My neighbor does too. You can see their geraniums in the winter. They put them in one of the windows that faces our house, and you can see the blooming geraniums. So a lot of these annuals make great houseplants, and they essentially become mother plants for you to propagate next year. So you can take that one dragon's wing begonia and, probably make 10 or 20 of them for next spring. And you'd propagate that in probably early March. Just take some cuttings, put them in potting soil, and they root. It's like they're magic. They're very easy to, very, very easy to propagate. So there are also some herbs. Maybe the lemongrass, you want to bring that in. I often do. That will die over the winter outside. Rosemary, I bring that in also. Makes a lovely houseplant. And then you can use it all winter. It's they do sell some winter hardy varieties of rosemary, but I'm not sure they're winter hardy enough to survive a really tough winter. And don't know, this may or may not be a really tough winter in terms of temperature and cold and wind and things that would kill plants that survive most winters. But I bring that rosemary in. Again, makes a nice house plant. Unlike some other plants, most other plants that you might bring in for the winter, the rosemary doesn't really tell you whether it's drying out and is dying. It just, I've said probably last year about this time, it's kind of stoic, and it looks fine, doesn't really wilt, and then you discover it's just, it's completely dead. It's just, you got a dried rosemary plant, and it doesn't give you any of these warning signals of a lot of other plants that will kind of wilt or, send you a message that they need some water. The rosemary doesn't do that. So you could bring in a lot of little pots, individual plants, and that hasn't worked for me because invariably I don't water them enough and they dry out and die. So what I've been doing for quite a few years now is I take a big pot, one that a shrub came in, perhaps I save some of these big plastic pots, and it might be about 18 inches to maybe as much as 24 inches wide and about that high. So they're going to be pretty heavy. And, if you're using potting soil, that's not too heavy. If you mix in some regular garden soil, that's going to make the pot that much heavier to try to move around. So potting soil is probably the easiest thing to use. And you want a sturdy tray that can go under that so that you can water it from below and give it adequate water. But having a big pot with a whole bunch of plants in it, I'll just pack in 10 or 15 annuals I want to save for the winter, maybe five of them if they're really big ones. And last winter I saved just a kind of a bizarre variety of things just to see whether they would survive. And most did. And So now you have one pot with all these plants in it, and then I wait to water it till I bring it upstairs. I usually keep these things up in my office, which is up in the third floor attic, south-facing windows, and it's just lighter to carry that pot with all the plants in it, and then water it once it's up in my office. And I'll only water that, give it good soaking, maybe three times this winter. You know, if I bring it in mid-October, I might water it once in when I bring it up, and then maybe again in December, again in February, and then maybe in March I start propagating some of it. So you don't have to water it very much when they're in these big pots, and I've just had way more success keeping these annuals, doing that in one big pot, rather than individual pots. And I tried using this really big tray where I could put in maybe 15 individual little pots, like you might buy a annual in the spring at a garden center. And I figured that way I could water them all at once. They'd soak it up from down below. But I lost a bunch of them. I still didn't water them enough, and using the big pots has made all the difference. So again, think about which annuals you might want to save. If you're not sure, send me a photo. Maybe I can identify it for you, give you a sense for whether it might work, and experiment. I've brought in lantana. I've brought in, I always bring in elephant's ears. Those make great houseplants. They do drip from the leaves occasionally, so you don't want that over nice furniture. But it doesn't really hurt a floor or a rug. It's just an occasional drip of water. And, I've got lemon and lime trees. Those tropical plants like that have to come in. Passion vines, I bring those in. And I have a tomato from one of our listeners who has propagated Tom the tomato, which survived last winter indoors in his house, and it produced tomatoes all winter, basically. Didn't produce a lot. I don't think it had any artificial light. They sort of, the tomatoes that were there in the fall slowly ripened over the course of the winter. Kind of a large cherry tomato. And so he took some cuttings and rooted them this spring and started a bunch more of these tomatoes and gave me one. So that's one that'll come inside, and it's got lots of green tomatoes on it now. It's produced a lot of beautiful red ones, and I'll see if I can keep it producing tomatoes all winter long. Tomatoes is the one plant. It never really occurred to me to bring it inside for the winter. And I appreciate him updating me last winter and sent me photos. Really kind of fun to watch this tomato continue to grow. And he propagated it from cuttings, and we'll see whether, I'm not sure this is an extraordinary tomato or whether he's just, onto something that you can do and people generally just don't do it. There's another tomato, a Sungold, that I might try bringing inside also, just to kind of experiment. Sungold is a sort of orange-yellow cherry tomato that is really delicious. It's a common one to find at area garden center or farmers markets. And I have to say, Todd Lighthouse at Lighthouse Gardens at the Brighton Farmers Market has some fantastic cherry tomatoes. Rainbow cherry tomatoes, colors, shapes, lots of varieties, and they are extraordinarily sweet. And he keeps his from splitting. My Sungold split and Sweet 100 split. A lot of these cherry tomatoes will split when they get a heavy dose of rain. He keeps his tomatoes growing under high tunnels, which protects them from spring and fall frosts, but also they're fed drip irrigation, and so they're not subject to large amounts of water suddenly, like in thunderstorms and rain showers. So they don't get the big dose of water at one time, that they don't split. And so they are just beautiful tomatoes. He's also got awesome carrots. We'll talk about it more on the food show, but speaking of carrots, Fruition Seeds is featured on the cover of Edible Finger Lakes. A new issue is out, and Petra Page Mann is harvesting carrots in that photo. And these are cold-adapted varieties that they've been working on at Fruition Seeds, and they just some amazing carrots this time of the year. And one further note on the carrots, the ones from Todd Lighthouse often have the greens attached to them, which looks cool and shows you how fresh they are. But if you don't take those greens off when you get home, they will cause the carrot to go limp. They will suck the moisture out of the carrot. And if the carrot is limp and not crunchy anymore, it's not too enticing. And so you got to cut those or tear off the greens on top of the carrots when you bring them home from the farmer's market. And the Brighton Market will be open tomorrow from 9 to 1 outside Brighton High School parking lot. And a number of the other local markets, our West Side Market, South Wedge Farmer's Market, a lot of these markets have a couple more weeks, but generally by early to mid-October, they will shut down for the season, probably because it gets dark earlier and colder. So the season for farmers markets is drawing to a close, which means you really got to get out and visit as many as you can. There's some fantastic farmers markets. Yesterday, I drove down to Penn Yan and back, and drove by about probably 15 farm markets along 14A. And the extraordinary number of pumpkins and gourds being grown in the Finger Lakes. A lot of the Mennonite farmers, I think many of these were, a lot of them are in that area around Penn Yan. And so just some really gorgeous setups. There was one farm market which was stacking its pumpkins and gourds, sort of like people do with rocks. And they had, I think it was 6 or 7 on top of each other, a couple of the stacks of pumpkins / gourds, sort of flat pumpkins, not the big round ones, but more of the like Cinderella pumpkins. And so a pretty time to drive around, and the goldenrod is still blooming. It's a really beautiful time. I was searching, just kind of doing scouting in Penn Yan, and also a couple days ago went to Geneva and Canandaigua looking for the spotted lanternfly. And I've been reading just this past week about the vineyards that this invasive species is devastating in Pennsylvania. A couple individual lanternflies have been found in the Finger Lakes last year, one in Penn Yan. And the DEC is monitoring this. You should look up online to see what they look like so that you can help spot them. Just when you're hiking, I mean, it doesn't need to be near a vineyard, doesn't need to be near Penn Yan or where they found the other one, or anywhere in particular. These spotted lantern flies are very distinctive adults. When they're flying, they have red on their wings like a moth. They're sort of a little bit like a moth. They're a little more disguised when they're just sitting on the tree, and they love the tree of heaven, the Allianthus, which is a weed tree. But that is their favorite tree. They love orchards. They love grapes. They eat a wide variety of things, and are completely ruining some vineyards in Pennsylvania. There are maybe 21 or 23 counties in Pennsylvania now under quarantine, not from the coronavirus, but from this spotted lanternfly. And there are so many tourists that come here from Pennsylvania. That's probably how that spotted lanternfly got to Penn Yan. Last year it was found dead. Probably came off a boat or a car or trailer or something that it was driving up from Pennsylvania. And so we need to be vigilant. Look online, read a little bit about it. There's lots of information from Penn State, and Pennsylvania has been dealing with this for a few years, 6 years, I think. First one, maybe 2014, that was spotted. And they're trying to find some natural enemies of this spotted lanternfly and introduce them here. Also, there's some bacteria that apparently kill them. They are researching that. And so that's why we want to keep it out of the Finger Lakes and out of our orchard and our fruit belt as long as possible until some of these natural controls can be deployed. So look it up online. Look for these as you're off hiking, as you're walking around your street, as you go, you know, walk from store to store, or, you know, whether you're in a city or in a village or out in the countryside. Just be aware of what the spotted lanternfly looks like. If you find one, you should call the DEC, let them know. And I also appreciate if you let me know where it is and what you found. And if you're not sure what it is, send me a photo. They're pretty distinctive looking, though. So you're most likely to find them on this tree of heaven, the Allianthus. So it looks a lot like a nut tree. The bracts of leaves looks a lot like a black walnut. And it has seed heads on them that are in huge clusters right now. It almost look like flowers at a distance. So you know, that's where you're likely to find them. That's what I was in search of in Penyan and Canandaigua, especially looking around the boat launch areas. Again, people bringing boats up from Pennsylvania. I'm going to do some scouting in the state parks, but fall is the time that they lay their eggs. And so they'll die in the frost. So keep your eyes open, and again, let me know. And if you find one, and they are distinctive looking, so if you find one, kill it, save it, and the DEC will try to figure out whether it is, you know, a reproducing one. The one they found at Penyan, I guess the DEC said it was a female, but not had not produced any eggs. I don't know. I forget the term they used for it, but a non-reproductive female, something like that. So, again, look it up online, read about it, spotted lanternfly, and help us keep it out of New York State in general. When you're out and about, walking, driving, you know, visiting farms, etc., this time of the year, going to pick apples, keep your eyes open, on the lookout for it. You're unlikely to see it, but eventually, over the next couple of years, we will see more of them. There's almost no doubt of that. You can email me comments, questions, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back with For Love of Food and Discover the Finger Lakes this morning, and then the Grapevine tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.